Welcome back to another episode where we spark real conversations that ignite change. Today, we're diving into a game changer for every leader and team member out there. Imagine waking up excited to go to work, feeling connected with a mission that truly matters, and sticking around because you believe in it with every fiber of your being in what your company stands for. That's exactly what we're unraveling today. Now, today we have David. David, it's so great to have you on the show today. Take a moment to say hello to our listeners and tell them a little about yourself and your journey.
Well, thanks for inviting me to be on the show. I appreciate it. My journey started out in education, and I always tell people I'd still be in education if it wasn't for parents. Parents drove me nuts, but I transitioned to management consulting about 30 plus years ago, and have been doing that. I've been traveling around the world, working with organizations large and small, in order to help them understand who they are, what are the behaviors that drive success, what's the foundation of their culture, what are their values that or motivate them, that get them excited, what is their purpose in life, and then tie that into keeping them focused and moving towards success. And my current book, my newest book, Selecting the Best, is really about the marriage of hiring people who fit the culture of the organization, the values, and the result is higher retention, longer, faster productivity, and sustained success. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what I've been doing.
I love that. Now, to kick us off, David, what, first inspired you to explore the link between authentic company values and employee happiness?
Well, I guess my own life experience. I grew up in a family that was very involved and very passionate about, justice and fairness and doing the right thing. So values and ethics were always something that motivated me to look into and get involved with. And so when I was in education, I did a doctorate on the impl on moral education and social studies from a point of view, the Harvard Social Studies Project, which really looked at developing a society of people who could question what's going on and talk about what's right. And so when I made that transition to work, there was a to corporate world, it was a natural transition to look at, what are the values? What makes people work successfully in this organization versus the same people not be successful in another organization? It had to do with something, and it really has to do with, what they believe in and what they think is right. And, sometimes you can join an organization for all the wrong reasons because you're going to get a better salary, or you think there's more prestige, better title, and you get there and you're miserable. When you're not miserable because of the work you're doing, it's the same work you used to do. You're miserable because you can't get along with anybody. And how you behave and how they behave is very different. So really try to find, create organizations that are driven by people and are as great as the people inside of them. So if you can find out that root issue, which is around values, you can create a happy organization.
I love that. Now, how do you authenticate values at work and translate them into real-world engagement?
That's a good question. Well, the interesting thing is you can do a lot of these surveys. I got all these surveys, but those surveys are all based on the values of the person who created the survey. So if you did those, for instance, I was doing work at one of the major hospitals in Massachusetts, in Boston, and one of the values that have driven that hospital for over 200 years was humility. But if you use humility, or if you look for humility in any of these value surveys, it would not show up. That's not something which is normal. But for this very noble institution, humility was the foundation for success for any employee. And I saw that only because I interviewed employees about what really happens. How do they really engage with each other? How do they solve problems together? How do they recognize success together? And when you have, world famous doctors who are talking about giving recognition to their staff, when you have the CEO of the hospital walking around and calling people, anybody, whether it was food services or anyone, they were calling, they knew their name. They knew who they were. They called them by their first name. It's, they weren't, you're not impressed with the trappings of the hospital. They're impressed with each other. So that comes out. And so when I work with organizations, I really work with the people in the organization and talk about what really happens, because what's the values on the website, I affectionately call wall decor, because usually when employees walk by those and they look at them, they say, "I wish," because there's a real set. So there's an overt set of values and a covert. And when the overt and covert are one and the same, you have a happy organization. So I really try to find the covert values first and then see, can they move to those? What, celebrate those.
I like that a lot. Now, can you share an example of a team that you've been seeing, become more productive because they felt more aligned?
Yeah, I was working with a pharmaceutical company, major pharmaceutical company, with the engineering group and maintenance. And they had a gentleman there for years who was running the engineering group, and he always had an animosity towards the maintenance side and looked down upon them and didn't really consider them equals. And the executive vice president really wanted an integrated team. He also saw people as equals. And at one point, we developed, I talked about what are the behaviors that drive success, what are their code of conduct, so to speak. And part of that was to call out people that don't follow those behaviors. So one day I got a phone call from him and said that so and so is really continuing not to follow what we agreed to just a month ago. And I said, "Well, according to your what you agreed to, you've got to call them out on it and understand that there's consequences for doing that." And he was a little resistant to doing that. And about an hour later, I got another phone call from somebody else on the team who was complaining about the same person. So I said, "Well, there is safety in numbers. I mean, so why don't the two of you get together and just be anecdotal? Don't accuse them and don't say anything negative. Just be, how do you feel when somebody does this? And how would it make you feel if they didn't? What can they do so you don't feel that way?" The good news is that that gentleman, after 20 something years there, he two weeks later resigned from the organization because he realized that his behavior, which was working for 20 years, was not going to fit nor the organization's culture. He was always sort of a renegade for that, and that now it's sort of stuck. And so the team functioned much better, became a much more productive team. The employees within the organization were less stressed because they didn't see any more conflict between the leadership. And so those are the kinds of things that when you can get people aligned, and they can argue, it doesn't mean they have to agree on everything. They can argue knowing that the basic understanding of what they're trying to get to is more important than, one's own ego, then yeah, you can have success.
I love that. Now, why does alignment with values encourage people to take the ownership of their projects?
Oh, that's ownership of the project comes if I have, if I believe that I'm being treated the way I want to be treated, and I believe that the organization and I have the same joint purpose, and we're passionate about that, then we'll do it together. So when I was working with go back to the same pharmaceutical company, when I was working with them, I was talking with the maintenance guys, and these, they will clean the bathrooms, they fix the pipes, they make sure the electricity stays on. And one young man was, it was late for the meeting, and he apologized for being late. And he was fixing an incubator at one of the research labs. And one of the other gentlemen, been there for a long time, said, "We're the most important people in this organization." So I kind of challenged him and said, "Okay, so you got some research and development scientists here, which are rather well known. They teach at some prestigious universities. So why are you the most important people here?" He says, "Because the mission of the organization was to create vaccines to save children's lives." They said, "If we don't fix that incubator on time, if we don't wash the keep the bathroom clean and somebody falls, has a concussion, we will prevent the ability for our organization to create vaccines to save the lives of children." And that passion, when it is held by everybody equally, means that we'll all work together and help each other out. But if it's not, then everybody does their own thing and they put their own success ahead of the organization's success. So you can't take accountability, you can't take ownership if you don't believe in it and don't believe that your boss is taking ownership and taking accountability. You're not going to take it. So when you have an organization that's aligned like that, you're very successful.
I like that. Now, in your experience, how does values fit the influence, employee retention, and long-term loyalty?
Oh, I think that values everything. I mean, it's in the book Selecting the Best. There's a case study of an organization in Corpus Christi, Texas, which was a greenfield project for a $1 billion plant. And what we started out with was only the leadership team in establishing what are the behaviors of the values that held that team together. And so in doing that is something I always tell the CEO when I start, you might find there's an outlier on your team. And in that team, there was an outlier. So they talked to him, the CEO talked to him, and he was replaced. So they had a very strong team. Then they started hiring staff. And they hired staff based on alignment to the values of the organization. So, and I taught them how to conduct values-based behavioral interviewing to make sure there's a motivational alignment. And it's not about skill and knowledge. It's about, do they have the behaviors to get along with each other and to question each other and to still remain coworkers? And they interviewed during the day, they interviewed one gentleman, an engineer that had a specialty in a field that they weren't looking for. But he was so aligned to the values, the CEO said, only because the way we approach this did he hire him. Because in the past, he wouldn't have hired him. A year later, it turned out to be the best employee he had. Now, sadly, because of a number of uncontrollable incidents, the organization had to stop building this plant. And so it went into receivership. It was bought by another company. And they decided they want to hire back some of the employees that let go. So they're in Corpus Christi, Texas. So one of the employees was a gentleman they really wanted to hire back. And he was moved to Seattle, Washington. And when I was talking to him, he did come back on his own. So he moved from Corpus Christi to Seattle, Seattle back to Corpus Christi on his own dime. And then when I was talking to him, I found out he took a 25% cut in pay from his job in Seattle to work there. And I said, "Why'd you do that?" And he says, "After almost 40 years in organizations and oil companies, et cetera, this is the first place I've ever worked where the leadership really means what they say, and what they say and the values are exactly what I believe in." So when you can find a place where you know that your actions will be respected and they're natural and they're what you have always thought is the right way of doing things, you're going to find it's a lot friendlier to work there. It's a lot happier to work there. And so it turns out that there were about five or six people I interviewed that took a cut in pay to come back to work there. So if you want to have long-term success, you want to have retention of employees. If they're happy, they'll work there. And
Right.
when people say it's about money, it's never about money. Because if it was about money, we wouldn't have teachers, we wouldn't have
Yes.
policemen, we wouldn't have firemen, because they're the most underpaid people out there. But they
Right.
do it because of the passion, because what they believe in. It's the purpose of what they do that holds them together. And that's why I do work. I get excited when I see people come to me and say, you know, I really love working here because I could identify that I work in a place that has a belief system that's, you know, makes me proud to work here.
Yes, that's amazing. Now, what are some of the common barriers that prevent companies from living their stated values, and how can they overcome them?
Well, the first thing that happens is they hire new CEOs. And the new CEO believes the new broom must sweep clean.
Yes.
And therefore, they were hired because something was wrong. So they come in and they start making changes. And they make changes around how things get done, how processes, how people talk to each other, how decisions are made. And people who've been working there for a long time who are comfortable with the values, comfortable with the way of doing things, all of a sudden feel threatened. They feel insecure. I'm not going to make it here because the rules are changing. So the first big mistake people make is, especially boards of directors, is they hire people with a fancy resume that's coming from a fancy company who's successful without realizing it's not the same company. It's not the same industry. It's not the same purpose. But
Yeah.
they bring this stranger in to change things. So one of the glaring recent, you know, anomalies like that was at Home Depot when they hired Nardelli from GE. Now, everybody at Home Depot quickly knew that Nardelli was going to fail.
Yeah.
And 5 years later, he got a severance package of $260 million, which isn't bad. But he failed. People celebrated when he left. And when they brought the new person on, who also came from GE, this gentleman sat down with the founders and said, "Why were you so successful? What made this organization unique?" And he went back to the behaviors that made it unique to bring Home Depot back to its glory. And that's why I
Yes.
always say that sometimes when you have leadership that's taken them away from the values that made them great, I call it a back to the future exercise. How do we
Right.
return to the foundation that made this organization what it is?
Right.
And so one thing that prevents it is new leadership who thinks they have to change things. The other thing is that people are hired into the organization that are known for their skill and knowledge, for their experience, because that's what people traditionally hire for.
Yeah.
And they bring in people that don't fit the behaviors of the organization, and it creates stress within the
Yes.
people. And therefore, there's suddenly conflict arises, or people don't want to talk to each other anymore.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's because of hiring practices. And sometimes, you know, the organization is taken over by a venture capital company, and people get really worried that they're just going to sell it off for the parts because
Yeah.
they're not interested in su long-term success. So there are a lot of different things that impact why an organization moves away from what originally made it successful.
Right. That's so true. That's so true. I've seen companies go straight downhill because they brought in somebody brand new and they changed all the core values, they changed everything. And it affected not only the company, but then people, the consumers, who made the company were also backing off because they didn't like all these changes, especially because they were made so abruptly. People, they wanted the old one back. They
Right.
liked the old one. And so it not only affected the people who work within the company, it also affected the consumers and the people purchasing the products and the services as well, because they were used to the old way, and they liked a lot of the products and services and the way they did things also.
Yeah, I'll give you another example of that. I travel a lot, too much probably. But unfortunately, not recently, but I had gone to this one hotel in Ottawa for years. And I was there once so often that I got a gift on the bed when I got to the room. It was a bathrobe and a writing tablet. And I said, "Why did I get this?" And they said, "Well, this is your 90th stay this year. So we give you a gift." And then I didn't go there for a while, and I came back and something was off. And there was a gentleman at the desk, the front desk for check-in, and there was a lineup. And I got on his line because I knew him. And when I got there, I said to him, "You have a new general manager, don't you?" And he said, "How do you know?" And I said, "Because nobody's happy. It's not the same place it used to be." And there's an old expression in Yiddish that says, "A fish begins to stink from its head." And that trickles down. And that, if you're in the service business, you're absolutely right. It's going to impact the customers eventually. And it was impacting guests at that hotel. Because I stayed there for a while that visit and talked to quite a few of the long-term staff, and they were all, it was a major chain. So they were looking for other hotels in the chain to move to. And it wasn't the same.
I've seen that too. I've seen that at hospitals also. I've seen, people come in, the directors came in, people in charge, and they changed a lot of the thing ways they did things. And even doctors and nurses and people were looking to go to different hospitals because they just didn't like the way, the way things were being done. They didn't like the way they were being treated. They didn't feel right. And then also that the patients, got wind of it too, because they could feel, things were not the same. They saw the differences. They saw how the doctors were acting differently. They saw how the nurses and the practitioners were acting differently. And it affected the whole entire, circle. It's the hospitals, the crew, the team, and the patients.
Yeah, and that's also even becomes worse when there's a merger. And I say there's never such a thing as a merger, there's only an acquisition. I call it the golden rule. He who signs the paycheck rules, and that's going to be the foundation of the culture. So when United Continental merged, the board put Continental's leadership in charge, and it became Continental culture, even though it said United on the wing. So I'm sitting at, we had a delay in Houston. And so I stay overnight. So I'm at breakfast, and the table next to me are three pilots from United. And they were all complaining about the rules and their seniority change with the merger and this change and that change. Well, I had also worked with Air Canada and Canadian Airlines when they merged, and I heard some of the same stuff. So I said to the guys before I left, I said, "I can solve your conundrum and give you the answer if you want." And they said, they smiled like, "Who are you?" And said, "Sure." And I said, "Who's the CEO? And was he Continental or United?" They said, "Continental." And the sort of light bulbs went off. And one of the guys said, "Well, maybe I'll put my resume out as a pilot for a different airline." But it wasn't the United that he was used to. And I used to get on Air Canada, and when they first merged flights, and you heard Canadian flight attendants and Air Canada flight attendants literally arguing with each other who was the better airline. And there were very different behaviors, very different behaviors. And you could tell if you were a frequent flyer, which flight attendant came from one airline and which came from the other. And because the behaviors are different. And you join one airline as a frequent flyer, because you like those behaviors. And then when you get on a different airline, you don't like their behaviors. And so you say, I'll go back to the other one. So it does have an impact.
Definitely does. Definitely does. I've been in situations like that where I've been on airplanes and, they had merged with other companies and, the airline stewardess were not as nice as they were when I last traveled. So you do notice the difference, They acted
Sure
like they
is.
didn't want to be there, and that does, make a very uncomfortable feeling too when you're, a consumer, on an airplane and they're not so happy. It just gives you that uncomfortable feel.
Oh, yeah, very much so. Very much so. Yeah.
Now, your book is selling the best fostering a workplace based on values for lasting success. Now, what was the single most surprising insight that you uncovered while writing it?
I think in the beginning of the book, I talk about before I get into the process that I use or recommend and document. Is the myths. There are so many myths out there, which are the popular ways of doing things that either they learned at school or they remember from a previous interview that they did, and they replicate that. One of the myths is that you can use psychometric testing to select people. And, psychometric testing talks about traits, not behavior. And so you can hire people based on these, and people believe in it because it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because I'm using it, I got to justify it, so I'll say it works. And I'm not saying not to use psychometric testing. My approach is use it maybe for your final two candidates to see if there's something that the test could tell you is different from what you heard in the interview, and then re-interview them for that gap. But don't use it on everybody. The only people that are happy about that's the person who sold you the test because you're using it on 500 candidates when you should only use it on two. Another is an issue that started many years ago where people said, don't hire for culture. And they had a misunderstanding of what culture was. And a lot of managers traditionally make the mistake of hiring in their own image. So if I went, I the same height, I'm the same background, went to the same university, we're in the same fraternity or sorority, I get hired, whether I'm qualified or not. And so people felt hiring in your own image was hiring for culture, and that's not true, because I can hire for our values and beliefs, the behaviors of that, and have a variety of backgrounds, have a variety of geographical differences, but we have a similar belief system. So as a result of that, it's, so I talk about the misunderstanding of hiring for fit to culture as a foundation for talking about hiring for fit to values. So that, and then the other thing which is new is this whole AI thing that's going on. And it's created more problems than solved them. And it doesn't adjust for things. It doesn't allow for people that really fit the values of the organization to be identified. And there's been a lot of recommended interviews. It's kind of funny because Amazon created an AI for screening resumes. And then all of a sudden, HR, the recruiters are saying, how come we only have males we're interviewing? Because the whole idea was to try to get females into the organization. Well, the AI was based on people who've been successful in the past. We're all male. So they threw out a $1 million project because it didn't work. And because we're talking about fit to culture, fit to the organization's behaviors, that's not accounted for in a lot of AI projects. And since no two organizations are exactly the same, using some standardized AI isn't going to work. And the irony of it all is now with Workday, which is used by like 10,000 companies around the world, they're
Yeah.
being sued because Workday's a resume system kicks out anybody that's over 40.
Right.
And so, like, what's going on? So I have a warning for that. And also, there's now these bots that will interview you, and they'll ask the question, and they'll take your facial expression, et cetera. But the
Yeah.
problem with AI is it cannot interpret correctly people with accents because
Yes.
it's not trained on that, and
Yes. Yeah.
it doesn't read facial expressions of people of different shades of color
Right.
very well. So it's got built-in biases
Yes, it does.
that haven't been overcome yet. So I warn against using AI unless it's been truly tested with the
Right.
organization. I just did a presentation at the big international SHRM conference 2 weeks ago on the ethics of using AI for human resources. And there have been recordings of hundreds of issues that have been created by HR departments that have used AI. So those are some of the things that kind of surprised me, the depth and the quickness by which this technology has taken root, because it's only
Yeah.
been around for like 3 years, 4 years.
Yeah. Originally, it was made in 1979. It was made by the military, and they used it for security reasons to protect the country. And, nobody knew about AI. It was all for about protecting the country. And it was, they use it somehow. They had it created software. And it helped with the protection of the United States, but it was never meant, for more. And then later on, they found out more ways they could use it. But the problem is that it pulls old information or pulls data and it misinterprets data, so people now see that we can incorporate it in different things, but it's not meant for our to take things too hard. It's meant to give us guidance, a strategy, ideas, and then we do the rest of the work. It opens you up to new ideas that you may want to consider. But a lot of people just copy and paste and they implement it right away. And like you said, it can be interpreted different. I had spoken with a person, I gave them advice on how to build, their audience. And AI mentioned in the report, because I gave him a copy so he would remember what we talked about, it said he sounded very disappointed and sad. And he had an accent. So
Yes.
he was a little upset by that. He's like, I was not disappointed or sad, but AI just mentioned his tone. They just mentioned that, during this meeting, he sounded very disappointed and sad. And it was because of the interpretation of his accent. And it was, so yes, you're definitely right when it comes to stuff like that.
Use of AI that was used in industry, as far as I know, everybody's had experience with, and it's credit rating. Credit
Yeah.
score. And I worked with a woman who was considered one of the top 10 women in US banking, and she was in that area. And she always said to me, it's always 10% wrong. There's at
Yeah.
least 10% of people who get a good credit rating, and therefore we give a loan we should never give a loan to. And there's at
Yeah.
least 10% that say they should never get a loan that we should give a loan to.
Right.
So even one that's been around a long time and has been refined over and over again, it still doesn't get it right all the time.
Right.
So, that's why people go to the bank and they then complain, I didn't get my car loan, I didn't get this. And they got a good job. They've never missed paying a payment. But the way the algorithm was set up on credit rating, they see them as a risk.
Yes.
So, AI's got its issues. And the way I look at it is there's lots of AI out there right now and different versions of it. And when
Yes.
you think about more recently, when there were search engines, when the internet first flourished, there were hundreds of them to choose from.
Yes.
And now there's only basically three. And
Right.
it's going to be the same thing with AI. When you
Yeah.
think about the automotive industry started, there were literally hundreds of car manufacturers.
Yes, they were.
Now there's maybe 15 to 20 around the world. So it works itself out.
Yeah, it
And
does.
the early adopters sometimes get an advantage and then they get left behind because they hooked up with the wrong one.
It's so true. It's so very true. Now, you've not only written one book, you have two other books that you've written previously. Can you tell us a little about those books also?
Yeah, one is called Inside the Box, which when it first came out, my publisher Wiley said we can't call it Inside the Box because it was very popular to say think outside the box at the time.
Right,
And so,
right, right.
and I said, well, values are about thinking consistently and predictably, and thinking outside the values being you don't fit, you don't
Yeah.
belong. So it was inside the box. Well,
Right.
Josie Bass, their sub-publisher, decides to publish the book, said, no, Inside the Box is a great title. So it went with it. And that's really about values and leadership and how do you identify the values and why leaders who demonstrate values are successful and how it's successful. One of the stories in there is the Calgary Police Service, who I worked with for years, and they had a G8 meeting, and ABC News was kind of baffled because there was no violence and there was no disruptions to the meeting. And when you looked at it, why? Because Calgary police didn't carry their guns, they didn't wear shields, they didn't wear masks. They created a relationship with the protesters, which was very much aligned with their values. So I tried to figure out, is that something new or is that part of their DNA? And so my college roommate was on the Festival Express, which was this train ride from Montreal to Vancouver in 1970, which some of the unknown rock groups of the time, like the Grateful Dead, Shauna Na, Janis Joplin, etc. But nobody knew them back then. And so there was all sorts of issues, and they had to cancel the tours as they went along. There's a documentary on it, which is very interesting. They get to Calgary and they're disbanding. So they want one last concert they're going to do, and there's no violence. But I see the Calgary police in this video, and they're dancing with people, they're giving out flowers to people. Then I therefore contacted retired police officers and said, what happened? And the chief of police said that you're going to go and you're going to leave your guns and batons in your locker. These people just want to have a good time. And you have a good time with them and make sure if there's any trouble, you can separate it from the crowd. And there was no trouble. And it was more of a love-in. Well, they did the same thing many years later with the G8 meeting. And to just amplify how organization cultures are different, they were invited down by the state police. I won't say what state, that was having a G8 meeting to explain how were they so successful. And the officer from Calgary, who I have worked with for many years, said about a half hour into the presentation, they said, well, we can't do any of that. That's not the way we operate. And basically ended the conversation and he went back to Calgary and they had a G8 meeting with violence. But the every organization has its own culture, has its own value set. And just because it worked in one place doesn't mean it's going to work in another. And that's a great example. So that book, Inside the Box, is really about how do you identify them, why values are different, and what leaders need to do in order to celebrate what their values are to create a culture that is successful. And also it amplifies why culture doesn't change. I love it when organizations say they're going to change the culture, which means you got to change your values. And I know nobody's ever changed their values overnight.
Yes, they
And it's an evolutionary process, unless
don't.
there's a significant emotional event in your life, which could change, but that's rare. The other book, The Talent Edge, which was the first book, was about 25 years ago. I wrote that, which also was on interviewing. But the new book, Selecting the Best, is sort of a improvement upon that because I've learned a lot over the 25 years. So the new book has a lot of new information in it, as an update, and it focuses more on value alignment than that book. So those are the two books, the three books.
I love that. I love that. Now, if a leader could implement just one change tomorrow to strengthen values and alignment, what would you recommend?
I would recommend do something one of the CEOs did many years ago when we looked at the values and looked at the behaviors of the values that had root in the organization. And in discussing it with him, he said, that's a value behavior that behaviors that I myself don't do. And he had the courage to actually say to people at an all hands meeting and on a video that was distributed to people that weren't there that I need you to point out to me when I don't do this because I admit that I don't do it. And then I know I have to do it because historically we are more successful when we do that. And so to have the courage to do that. And the other piece I'd recommend is not to say they are aspirational, because once you announce them, people think you're going to live them. And say they're aspirational, you give people excuses to justify doing the wrong behavior and say, I'm not there yet. And so now the people that are there and the people that aren't there are going to have an issue. So I would say, know your values, not the aspirational values you want or think people want you to live. Be yourself, be authentic. What are your values? And the other thing, which is like drives me nuts, is when people say core values, they imply there's a second set of values if the first ones don't work out. You have one set of values. There's no such thing as core values, in my opinion. There's one common set of values that's the foundation, the rest are beliefs. And so my definition of values are strongly held beliefs, emotionally charged, resistant to change, universally applied. They are the same for everybody in the organization. There's not, it's like you can't be a little bit pregnant, I guess. Or you can't be like, it's okay to have some of the values some of the time. And as I grow, I'll get more of them. No, you have to have them from day one.
Yes, 100%. I agree with you. Definitely. Now, if you had to take today's conversation and you wanted to emphasize on some important factors, what are some things you'd like to emphasize that you want the listeners to walk away with today?
So understand what your value and behaviors are, understand what the organization's values behaviors are, and to make sure there's alignment and for you to be emotionally healthy and for the organization to be healthy. It's a hard thing to say when, especially if you're a recent graduate and you just want to desperately get a job, but you're going to be finding a new job in 6 months because you're unhappy there. So are you better to wait and find the right organizational fit, or are you better just to jump in and be miserable? That's why I used to tell my students, and ask about the values. So values need to be authentic. They can't be, decor on the wall. They have to be lived, to be real. And also that when you hire people for a job, skill and knowledge is nice, but have you been asking the right questions the right way? And in my book, Selecting the Best, I have a whole section which is a step-by-step understanding of how to build a truly behavioral question and leave it at that. Allow the people to answer it. Don't try to answer it for them when they're silent. Silence is powerful. And, if the candidate is quiet, you stay quiet because human nature is to try to give them hints on how to answer, especially if you like them. And stay away from that. Just be quiet and let them come up with the answer. They will. And then figure out, does the answer fit what you're looking for?
I love
So
that.
I think that's it. And leaders have to be authentic and they have to be real and they have to understand that if they act a certain way, they'll find people who also act that way, have the same purpose. It'll be a long-standing organization.
I like that a lot. That's great advice to give to the listeners. Now, where can people find your books?
Well, the books are on Amazon, and that's the best place to get them. The first two books, Inside the Box and The Talent Edge, are only available now in e-readers. Most publishers are going away from having inventory. And so only recent books are really hard copy. So Amazon's the best place to get it, or any of the online sellers. They all have it. And because it is distributed by a Canadian publisher, there's not it's not going to be found in bookstores as hard copy, except in the online stores. And also they can get information about the work I do in, by going to the website, which is sagltd.com. sagltd.com, and it really details a lot of the stuff. And I have a lot of the articles I've written, and also on LinkedIn. I have a lot of articles there on all of these topics, especially corporate culture, articles on hiring, talent management, etc.
Now, can you tell people, briefly, like all the different services you provide?
Yeah, we worked with not only values and identification of values, but really the application of those values to selection systems, interviewing, performance management, succession planning, leadership development, identification of high potential leaders in a fact-based, bias-free way. A lot of the stuff we do 360 feedback with organizations. The idea is to try to be bias-free, to be accurate, and to be fair. And how do you do that is not easy. And so we've developed some ways of doing that.
I love it. I love it. This has been amazing. I thank you so much, David, for coming on the show today.
I thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Your information was so valuable. I think it really needs to be heard and shared. And this is something that, people struggle with on a day-to-day basis. It affects companies, it affects people within the companies. And like we said, it eventually, it affects, the people in society who are interested in those services or products. And it's, we need to really focus on how to work as a whole team and really bring that culture in, as one where people understand each other, people respect each other, and people work on the same level where, and so we bond together as one, and everybody's on the same level, and everybody has the same respect for each other, which is very important. And understanding what the company is about. And if you decide to make change, you really need to really think about making change, because it can affect the company. And sometimes change is really good. And sometimes you have to think twice. Do I really want to make these changes? Is it really going to benefit the company? So people like you are very helpful because you could really see, inside and outside the box. So,
Yeah, sure. Well said. Yeah, and change for the sake of change, or because the competition's doing it, usually the wrong reason. Be yourself. Don't you're not the competition. So that's and you're right. It's an evolutionary process of changing. So thank you for the conversation.
Oh, you're very welcome, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
I hope you have a great day and
Thank you.
thank you.